This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Aruba Tourism Authority, NY World Class Mart, the New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Hammer and Aruba All Inclusive Resort, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, JetBlue, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, Brennan Smoke Shop, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The 2-2, and they get him to chum on a ball in the dirt. That's going to do it. The Dodgers come into Boston and take 2 out of 3. The best record in the game gets even better.
Well, not exactly how the Red Sox drew it up last night at Fenway Park. Sunday Night Baseball, they fall to the Dodgers in extra innings, and they drop the best of three series at home to what is the best team in baseball. It's Adam Jones, Marshall Hook, here on the Baseball Reporters until 7 o'clock. We'll get to all your phone calls, 617-779-0985. And we can certainly get into some of the decision-making of Alex Cora, though I do get the sense nowadays, Hook, and I don't know if you agree with this, I get the sense nowadays that while you used to be a lot of be able to do a lot of the second guessing of the manager, X's and O's, he did this, he did that, he should have done this, he should have done that, I get the sense you just can't do as much Monday morning quarterbacking with the manager as you used to be able to do, because quite frankly, I don't know how many people were staying up and watching that game last night.
Well,
I don't know how many people
true.
Were hanging on every single pitch the way you used to 10, 15, 20 years ago in this city or anywhere else. So, you know, if you have thoughts on the way Cora handled it late, if you have thoughts on something I know Felger and I and Hook were debating all day, mostly Felger and I, whether or not it's more on Bradley or the manager putting his player in a bad position there. Bradley certainly screwed up. You guys can jump in, but I honestly wonder how many people were still hanging with it on the final pitch last night.
Well, I mean, I don't know that a lot of people were very, very late at night. And there becomes, I mean, listen, it's one thing when it's the Dodgers and Red Sox in the World Series and they go to 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever the heck that was. It wasn't the case last night.
No.
I mean, this game mattered only a tiny little bit in the grand scheme of things, and I just don't think you're going to get people up that late.
So, you know, I know it's the Baseball Reporters. I know there's a lot of baseball fans out there, but just, you know, I'm parachuting in for a night on this show, and I got to be honest. I wonder how many people were hanging on every decision that Cora made in the 10th, 11th, 12th innings. If you were like me, I watched the back-to-back home runs in the 8th inning, and, you know, this probably makes me a bad guy, Hook, but I watched the back-to-back home runs in the 8th inning or whatever inning it was, and I said, crap, this stupid thing's going extra innings. Like, that was my reaction. I'm like, oh, great. Now I got to stay up and watch this stupid thing. So you guys can jump in. 617-779-0985. I initially, when that game wrapped up last night, Hook, I initially wanted to give them credit, they being the Red Sox, for going toe-to-toe with the Dodgers. Again, the aforementioned best team in baseball, World Series runners-up last year, really good NLCS the year before against Houston, like a team that's been there, kind of kicking at the can for a championship, huge payroll, lot of stars, a lot of recognizable names, and the best record in baseball. I wanted to give the Red Sox a little, in hockey parlance, pity point for what went down last night. They blew out the Dodgers on Friday night. They got smoked on Saturday. Chris Sale was embarrassing. And then last night, they go to the 12th inning. They battle back. They force extra innings. Like, they're going toe-to-toe with the best team in baseball, and you lose on what eventually turned into a coin flip of a game, right? They threatened in extra innings. They wound up falling. Once you got to reliever number 12 on the team or pitcher number 12 on the team, fine. The Red Sox have Hector Velasquez out there, and they lost the game. My initial first blush reaction was give them credit, because they prove they can hang with the best of the best in the sport. They just proved that. So if you're out on the Red Sox, this is a pretty good counterpoint. They hung with the Dodgers, and they hung with the best the Dodgers have to offer. Ryu is the best pitcher in baseball, hands down, this season, best pitcher in baseball. And you hung with him, and you hung with that team. But then I remembered, there's no pity points in baseball, period, and there's none for this team specifically. They screwed around in April. They got all the leeway they could handle in April, as much leash as we were going to give them. We gave them back in the first month of the year. Now they can't afford to pee games like that away, Hook. They can't afford to give those games away. A game where you came back, you had all the momentum, you forced extra innings, and you constantly either ran into outs or left guys on the bases all night long. You can't do that. Not when you start 6-13. Not when you're, as I heard Tony in the analogy make last week, when you guys were on the Baseball Reporters, I think Wednesday or Thursday night, and I was driving home, I heard him make this analogy. You're running uphill all year. Now you're running uphill this season. And if you didn't bury yourself in April, you buried the division, and you put yourself so far behind the eight ball that I don't know that you can dig out. And to dig out, you absolutely, no questions asked, need games like last night. You need series like this weekend. And the Red Sox didn't capitalize. So even though I wanted to give them a pity point, I really can't. Not for the way they started, not the position they put themselves in back in April.
They didn't earn it. I mean, like, we hear all the time, like, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint and all of that. Fine. Let's just use it as people running, right? It's a race. And so if you, in April 1st, everyone got off the start line and you kind of stood around for a while, you tied your shoe, you said, I'll get going here in a little bit. And ever since then, you've been looking at everyone else's ass. You've been running around and everyone's in front of you. So every once in a while, they sprint a little bit, right? They're like, oh, we're really going to run here. And they catch up with Tampa. They catch up with Yankees. They haven't really. At least they catch up to 500. And then they catch their breath and they fall back again. And so that's what you don't, if you're the Yankees, you can take a break.
Yep.
You can pull over to the side of the road and grab a little water. You can,
you're a Yankees fan and this series happened.
You can go pee in the bushes. You can do whatever these guys do when they're running races that are really long. If you're in the lead, you can go do other things. The Red Sox can't afford to do any of those things. And when they really exert themselves, the best they can hope for is almost catching up with the people in front of them. Yep. So when you have opportunities like you had last night and you're peeing in the bushes them away, then you know what? You don't get a pass for that.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, if we were doing a show in New York and this were the Yankees and this were their series, right? You call it a measuring stick series and you say the Yankees couldn't... Like, I'm not saying we wouldn't nitpick it. I'm not saying I'd feel great about a loss. But at the end of the day, you'd acknowledge one blowout each way and then a 12-inning game that could have gone either way. Like, you proved you could go toe-to-toe with the best of the best in baseball.
And you'd be talking about what it's going to look like when you meet up with them in the World Series.
Correct.
And how that could very well be the way the World Series goes, blah, blah, blah.
And this team, you can't do that.
No.
Because of where they started. And I think that's a big factor. That's looming over them all year long. It's going to continue to loom over them all year long. So 617-779-0985. What have the Red Sox accomplished this weekend, if anything? Did they prove to you they can hang with the Dodgers? Is that enough? Or do they need to finish this off and take both those games? Again, 617-779-0985. I maintain, Hook, I know this drove Felger up a wall, I maintain that the biggest issue for me last night in extra innings is Alex Cora and his inconsistency. And I got to be honest, I don't care if it is the nerds upstairs and their advanced metrics and their reams of data telling Cora what to do. To me, that tells a bigger story about Alex Cora. Alex Cora has no convictions. Alex Cora has no core beliefs that he's allowed to exercise and go with on either a gut feel or something he's learned over the course of time. If you're going to bunt in the ninth inning, first to second, same hitter, same base runner. Bradley on first in the ninth, Marco Hernandez up. And he executed, by the way, for the record, an excellent bunt, moving Jackie Bradley from first to second. They sacrificed the out. They didn't score there. And I would not bunt in that situation. I would not have bunted in the 11th either. I am consistent. You can disagree with me, but you can't call me inconsistent. I wouldn't have bunted in the ninth. I wouldn't have bunted in the 11th. Your manager last night, or whoever's in his ear, bunted in the ninth inning, first to second. Saw that work in terms of the execution of the bunt. They didn't score. And then said, you know what? In the 11th inning, we got the leadoff guy on second. We're not going to bunt him over to third. Even though that worked earlier, we're not going to do that. And then Jackie Bradley, he doesn't deserve any leeway here. Jackie Bradley decides to run into an out at third base, cut down by a million miles, and it takes momentum away. But I still start with the manager. You're putting your players in a position to fail. And not being consistent to me has guys guessing. They don't exactly know what Cora wants. They don't know what Cora expects. They can't anticipate what they're supposed to do going into the at-bat. If I were Hernandez, I assumed he would have bunted there. I assume because I bunted before, I bunt again. And instead, they execute what they did last night. So I have a big problem with Cora and how he handled it. Whether it was ultimately his call or someone above him, the bare minimum I want is my manager to be consistent and have conviction and actually believe in something. And Cora clearly doesn't.
Well, here's the thing. Terry Francona gets hired as manager, wins a World Series in his first year. Now, he ended up doing pretty well after that. John Farrell gets hired, wins a World Series in his first year. You're not allowed to question him for a while after that. Couple last place finishes, kind of changed things. Alex Cora gets hired. Stop me if you've heard this before. Wins a World Series in his first year. So we're still in that afterglow stage where, as you could tell by the way people were okay with his approach in spring training, the way people, you know, yelled at me and probably you in April when we had the, you know, the temerity to question whether or not this slow start could ultimately harm them.
I mean, Cora laughed at people who questioned that, by
yes.
the way. Not just listeners and, you know, other media, like Cora scoffed at that.
I don't know if you all saw what we did last year. It
yeah,
seemed
we won,
to work then.
We won the World Series. You see that?
Yeah. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah, so apparently we're, I don't know how long it takes for us to question. I would think you could do it immediately because I hear from a lot of these coaches when it suits them across all sports that every season's a fresh start. Every season's a new season. We can't you know, rest on the laurels of what we did last year. We've got to start fresh and new this year. But apparently that doesn't always count. And with fans, and it comes to Alex Cora, a guy who, by the way, I give more credit than some people do because I do think there are things he's doing well. You know, this is a team that's been roundly criticized, and rightly so, about a lot of things. And typically, or often at least, teams in those positions, you might hear about more infighting. You might hear about more discord in the locker room. You might hear about that. And we haven't heard any of that. And I'll be happy to give Alex Cora credit for that, but there's plenty of stuff he's doing otherwise. I'm not willing to give him any credit.
I wonder how much more goodwill he deserves. Like, didn't he use up most of that in April?
Like, or March, actually.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah, so even better. Like, before the year got going, their approach in spring training when they were holding guys out, and then it trickled over into April. Okay, fine. He had his goodwill there. People, not you, not me, maybe not a lot of people on this station, but
Matt McCarthy.
A lot
big,
of people
big out, Alex Cora fan.
A lot of people out there were defending him and defending his approach and saying, they won the World Series last year. What else do you want? Does he still deserve that? Does he still deserve that leeway? Not with me. He used that up in April and maybe in March, to Hook's point. And I think he should be getting more criticism for how he handled things last night in extra innings. You're the manager. You're the one who put, what else do you do? What else do you do besides have some deep core belief that you're going to execute certain plays here and certain plays there, like a sacrifice bunt, for instance, and your manager isn't even consistent enough to believe in that? 617-779-0985. We'll get to all your thoughts. Red Sox did make a trade as well. And, Chris Sale stunk again. We'll do that coming up next.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We are going to add Nathan Eovaldi. I know for some reason people seem to like not grasp onto that. He's a big addition for us coming, and we think that he'll be ready to go within about a week to join us on a full-time basis out there. So he is an addition to our bullpen. We just added Stephen Wright recently. So I don't know. I don't know if we'll do anything else in that regard. We kind of like some of our guys out there.
Well, don't forget we're getting Nathan Eovaldi back. You guys aren't giving me any credit. Nathan Eovaldi's coming back. That was Dave Dombrowski over the weekend. I hope, Hook, not foreshadowing and letting everyone know that I'm done. Like, that was my only move. Andrew Cashner, if you haven't heard, guy who's pitched decently in Baltimore this year, sub-4 ERA, which is more than you could say about Chris Sale, who got shelled on Saturday, I think is a decent enough get for the Red Sox. It's an upgrade at the fifth starter spot. Maybe he's a guy who can kick to the bullpen in October, but I hope to God Dombrowski isn't foreshadowing and letting you know that, now I'm done. He should not be done with just adding a fifth starter. If you're doing this in conjunction with another arm or two in the bullpen, in addition to Nathan Eovaldi, great. If Eovaldi's your closer and this is your big move at the deadline, then that's not enough. Not enough for the Red Sox to go on a run, and may not be enough to get the Red Sox into the postseason. So I'm okay with this move on its own. I'm okay with this move, as I said, in a vacuum. But in terms of this being it and now the Red Sox are set, no. There's a lot more work to be done for Dave Dombrowski.
Well, listen, I've gone ahead and pulled up Nate Eovaldi's career stats here.
Yep.
And because I'm going to say, you know, if Dave Dombrowski is going to get this kind of haughty with us and dismissive, then
sure,
clearly Nate Eovaldi must have an established record somewhere in his past.
Gotta be.
As a closer, right?
Yep.
So made his debut, by the way, something I don't even think I realized, with the Dodgers in 2011.
Ooh.
Pitched with Miami, then went to New York. That's where I remember him from. Mm-hmm. And as we know, he was acquired from Tampa Bay. So in 8 years, would you like to guess his total number of saves?
Oh, I'm going to have to say, the way Dave Dombrowski's talking about it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe 40 or 50?
That'd be zero.
Oh, zero.
Oh, wait. Though, you know, to be fair, let me go ahead and check out the his minor league numbers.
Oh, good.
His minor league numbers. In rookie league, the L.A. Dodger mini team or something like that?
Rancho Cucamonga?
Maybe.
Yep.
Who knows? He had a save.
Oh, well, they're in your face, Hook.
Yeah.
I bet Dombrowski was factoring that in.
Yeah. Oh, but it doesn't end there.
Yep. Oh, the playoffs, right? Because he had a bunch of saves in the playoffs.
In 2009, he had another one. So 10 years ago, he had a save at single A. He had a single save at single A 10 years ago.
Good teams in that league, though.
And who knows? Maybe that could have also been one of those three-inning things where you come in and you go down the you know, I'd have to look up his minor league game log to really – to really nail that down. So ultimately, while I disagree with the, I mean, you have no problem with putting Nate Eovaldi into the closer role.
Now that they're in this position, and especially if Henry's like, hey, figure it out with what you've got, then I don't really know what the alternative is. So yeah, I'm actually a fan of that move, but they got to do a lot more. Yeah.
I look at it and say he's an injury risk, obviously, to Tommy Johns and hasn't pitched yet this year. And so he's not a guy that you put into a high leverage back-to-back day kind of pitching situation. So I don't like it even a tiny little bit, which is fine. But the way Dave Dombrowski talks about it, it's like he's saying to me and people like me, who are you even to question this? Like, obviously, Nate Eovaldi is our closer. Why would you even suggest that I need to do something else? And so it's the tone of it as much as anything, rather than, hey, you know, being somewhat straightforward. We've tried a lot of people in this role. It hasn't really worked out. Right now, we've looked around the trade market and the options out there. We're not seeing what we need. So we're going to give this a try. We're going to give this a try. If the approach was we're going to give this a try, I would be a hell of a lot more on board with it than this haughty, dismissive, who the hell are you to question me?
And just,
of course this is something we're going to do.
Just taking credit for a guy coming back, like, hey, this is a move. I just generally hate when teams do that. Like, oh, well, you know, Gordon Hayward last year with the Sox. Well, they're adding Gordon Hayward. No, they're not. We're all factoring in that Gordon Hayward's coming back, and we'll see how he looks. Like, you don't get credit for that. Your job is to add to the team. Your job isn't to heal guys and have injured guys get back out there. Your job is to add to the team. We were all factoring in Nate Eovaldi as the closer. We're probably doing that too much at this point in time because I thought he'd be the closer starting the second half. And apparently he's just now going out on a rehab assignment, if I read that correctly.
You can get, if it's all about healing people, you can get Mr. Miyagi and he can come in and do the clap and the rubbing the hands together.
It's a good point.
And just lay it right on the knee or the shoulder or whatever.
If Miyagi wants to take credit for Eovaldi coming back, great. I'm not giving that to Dombrowski. Dombrowski, your job is to add to the team if the owner will let you, which is a whole nother side debate. 617-779-0985. Ted's in Milford. You're next up here on the Baseball Reporters. What do you got tonight, Ted?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
Look, there are plenty of reasons to crap all over the Red Sox, but Cora's decision in the 11th last night is not one of them. I just want to defend him for that. If you've already got a runner in scoring position, why are you trying to advance him? A hit scores him, and that's it. You don't want to put him on third and risk a bad bunt or anything like that. You want to move him from first to second. That's fine to do that in the eighth inning, or the ninth inning, whenever that was. But moving from second to third is just silly. There's no reason to do that.
See, I think Ted, if you'd move him up from first to second and wasting out on that, why not do it second to third? Because while you're right, something bad could happen with him at third. He could also score on a sac fly.
Sure, but you've got to say second base is scoring position. And for the same reason, you don't usually try and steal third from second as opposed to stealing second from first. You see that a lot more often because the risk is too big for the reward. But by all means, continue to crap on Chris Sale, continue to crap on the Red Sox as a whole. I completely agree with the rest of it. I just don't think that's a good argument there.
I just want to see him be consistent. That's all. So if you're going to bunt up in the ninth, it's not even like, oh, it's a different part in the order. It's the number nine hitter there, but now it's the meteor. Nope, same hitter, same base runner, different pitcher. and different base. He's right about that. I think if you're willing to do it from first to second, you'd do it from second to third. Like that feels consistent to me. And maybe other guys are calling the shots. Maybe it is people upstairs. Maybe it is reams of data and nerds above them. If so, that exposes Core even more. That tells me you have no conviction and no consistency and no belief. So that to me last night did bother me. And again, Bradley, not good base running at all. I generally think he's a good base runner. I'll cut him some slack on base running. I normally do. His defense is overrated and his bat is non-existent. Generally, he's a good base runner. So last night was a brain fart and a mistake, and that's obvious. You can't get thrown out on the bases. I got that. I'd like your manager to let guys know the position they're going to be in, let them know what to expect. And at least, like I say this with guys in the NBA all the time, Hook, like you get these end-of-game situations where it's like, do you foul here? Do you let the guys play here? Do you hold out for a two-for-one? Or hold out for a final shot? Do you push for a two-for-one? Like, honestly, I don't care a lot about what coaches do in those spots. All I want is consistency. If you're a guy who fouls with 3 seconds left, then foul. If you're a guy who pushes for a two-for-one, go for it. If you're a guy who settles for a three instead of rushing for a layup and then fouling down, then go for it. Fine. All I want is consistency. Because that means you believe in the methodology. You know, that means that you ultimately believe in something and you'll go down swinging with it. I don't think Cora does. And I think some of that was exposed last night. 617-779-0985. So when it comes to the addition of Andrew Cashner, which, again, I like, I'll deal with. I think in a vacuum is fine. I wonder if Dombrowski's allowed to do more than that. In other words, Cashner was a deal. He came in for $1.5 million. The Orioles are eating half of that salary. They're going to pay any performance bonuses that are achieved in the offseason above and beyond what he's already on the hook for. So it's a good deal for the Red Sox as much as they're getting a good player. Is Dave Dombrowski truly allowed to add to this team? Is he allowed to add within reason? I'm not asking for Madison Bumgarner and $30, $35 million a year. Is he allowed to add to this team? Or is the owner handcuffing him, which I know sounds crazy when they have the highest payroll in baseball, but what's a couple million more to really help you contend? 617-779-0985. We'll get to you guys and the latest on John Henry right after the headlines here from Marshall Hook.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I'm going out there the fifth inning and get my ass kicked. What do you think? It's not fun. Still working, still grinding. Not going to give up, but you know, it's tough. You know, going out there every day, being a liability for your team.
That was Chris Sale after another dud of an outing on Saturday. 6:37 here on the Sports Hub. Baseball Reporters, no Tony Maz, Adam Jones, Marshall Hook. Taking you up until 7 o'clock. I believe Joe Murray will be taking over at 7. A little Joe show action. So you can stay tuned for that with all your phone calls here. 617-779-0985. Just briefly on Sale here, Hook, before we get to the calls. I'm just sick of what Sale is doing after every game. Like, I'm just sick of hearing over and over and over again, yep, I suck. Yep, I got to be better. Yep, I'm a liability, or whatever he said this time. Like, it's some alteration of what he said before, but it's all the same thing. I suck. I don't have it. Got to be better. And while I will take that, compared to David Price making excuses or Kyrie Irving making excuses or someone like that, there does have to be a point in time where it's just like, okay, guys, look, I know I sound like a broken record, so you know what I'm going to do? I'm still going to come out here and answer questions, but no, I haven't. Obviously, I haven't figured it out. If I figured it out, I'd turn things around. And until then, just give me the same stock answer. Guys, I told you last time, I haven't figured it out. I still haven't figured it out. I would like to hear from Chris Sale next time he's actually good. Until then, you can wake me up if and when he actually has a good outing. I know you suck in the meantime. I know you have sucked in the meantime. I'm not saying your career's cooked. I know you feel hooked, like maybe he's trending the way of Tim Lincecum, and that's fine. I'm not totally ruling that out, but I don't feel that way about him. I still feel okay about Chris Sale long term. But in the meantime, right now, I may be chalking it up to a lost year for him, not a lost contract and not a lost career. But I'm starting to wonder if it's a lost year. And until you have a good start, I don't need to hear from you. Let me know when you actually pitch well. In the meantime, I'm good. I got it. You suck, and you're a liability. Yep, we've all wrapped our heads around that.
You're not the only one who said this, but I don't know that I can get fully on board with this, because short of actually pitching better, there isn't really, I mean, your choices after a game, regardless of you do well, not whatever, somewhere in between, is you can either speak to the media or not. So choice one is not to. Choice two is, when speaking to the media, be in denial about what happened or be honest about what happened. And of all of those, absent everything else, like if I'm giving you just those three choices,
sure,
wouldn't you take be honest about what happened?
I would.
And at this point,
couldn't you just trim it? Couldn't you trim it down a little bit? Do I need a big soliloquy every time? Like, oh, I'm a liability, you know, this, all that, but I'll get it figured out. No. Just, yep, you suck now. Got it. Okay, good. Move on to the next answer. Move on to the next. Like, I do think there is an in between. Like, I know you're proposing it as two extremes, and at the end of the day, you're probably right. I'll take this extreme over the other one. Someone being accountable.
I mean, because we've seen that. We saw that from David Price. We saw that from, I think, Rick Porcello in the past.
Sure.
We saw an entire career of that from Tim Wakefield.
I'll take
every
it.
Time after Tim Wakefield pitched, he'd say, well, I thought I was hitting the
knuckleball was moving. Knuckleball was moving out there. So you're probably right, and that's probably fair. Like, one extreme over the other, I'll take him being accountable. I'm just a little sick of hearing the accountability and, oh, I suck, and him getting pats on the back for being accountable. Like, a lot of people do that for
him, too. Maybe that's what it is, then, because dare I say, you know,
look at him. He's up there facing the music, and he's taking it like a champ. Okay, good. I don't want him to take it like a champ anymore. I just want him to pitch better.
I would say your bigger problem is he's not pitching better. Like,
yes.
That is the main problem. And secondarily, yes, people giving him credit, I can see that. Like, well, what else? I mean, that's what he should do. That's like one of those things in life when people get credit for doing what they just should do to begin with.
Yep.
Like, I get that. Mm-hmm. This is what he should do. So, all right, fine. Don't blame him for that. I mean, he's not saying, and hey, guys, you should give me credit for coming out here.
Yeah.
Or do you think there's a little vibe? Of course, I think you would see that little vibe.
I think
vibe
he's just lame. He's just like, just shorten it up a little bit.
Okay, tighten it up.
Big, long soliloquy every single time about how much you suck and how much of a liability. We got it. We get it. You've been saying it all year.
I have somewhere in my head that there was a guy who handed out paper statements rather than talking to the press. Maybe that could be the way he could go. Listen, guy, I can just tear it off my pad here. This is the I pitched poorly speech. You guys can all take
it. This is my answer about my season. Okay? I'm not so good. I haven't been good for a long time. If you got questions about specifics, you know, I hung a breaking ball here or how I attacked the lineup there or whatever, fine, I'll answer all those questions. I don't want to duck you guys. Here's my standard boilerplate I suck answer this season. Pass it around, run it in your stories, rerun it next week. Until I figure something out, I this is going to be my answer to you guys.
We have a mimeograph over there. You can go ahead and run some copies off. We can plan. Yeah.
He's not ducking the media. He's answering other questions, just questions about his season and how he's got to figure it out. Just hand out a boilerplate stock answer. I'll take that. 617-779-0985. Kevin is in New Hampshire. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. Before I get to Cora, I just want to say on sale, I mean, maybe he needs a staples button with all his typical answers on what he says about his poor performances.
An easy button.
Because at this point, I think he's just telling us exactly what he wants us to hear.
Uh-huh.
As for Cora, I don't think he made the wrong decision not moving Bradley over, because Marco Hernandez is a natural lefty. You know, any ball to the right side, whether it's in the air or on the ground, that's a sacrifice right then and there. So Bradley's got to do his job and stay on second.
Why didn't he sacrifice? It was the same situation in the ninth in terms of who was up at the plate.
No,
it was
on first base. If he hits a ball to the right side, it could be a double play. So I totally get to move him over in that situation.
See, I mean, sure, I guess. Hernandez moves pretty well. Bradley typically moves okay, though I think he'd probably be a sitting duck at second on the right ball. So fair point. I feel like it's inconsistent. And maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. Maybe the baseball purists are telling me I'm barking up the wrong tree. You know, to me, that's how I would have handled it. If you're going to bunt in the ninth and get a guy from first to second and waste an out, you should be going second to third as well. And if you want to think about the handedness and you want to think about putting balls in play against certain pitchers, fine. I mean, I guess you can think about it that far. It's really as simple as this. In the ninth inning, he gave away an out to get a guy first to second. In the 11th, he wouldn't give away an out to get a guy second to third. And while there are different upshot plays and upside plays, what I would tell you is at least if he's a third, he can score on a sac fly. I would not give away the out either time. I would not waste an out when I only have three of them in that situation in a game. Whether it's moving a guy first to second, which he did, which I think is a bigger waste because he's further away, than moving him from second to third. That's how I view it. If you're telling me that they want to look more into it, then fine, they want to look more into it. I think that's inconsistent. I think they're focusing too much on that. I think they're looking too deeply at it when it's as simple as that. If you'll move him first to second, you should move him second to third. Anything else, you're overthinking it. 617-779-0985. 0985. So, Hook, I know you and Tony Maz spent some time on robot umps last week, right?
We did.
Are you actually a convert on robot umps?
I am. I was, on the initial thought of that. I said, no. I was one of these baseball purists. But then I did what not a lot of people here in sports radio, or really talk radio in general, did, was I thought about it.
Yeah, see, I don't do that. I don't think. I just hunker down. That's like what I'm doing with Coral right now. I don't think. Hunker down. Anchor down.
And I realized that there is no downside to this whatsoever. I look at it, and not for any of the parties involved, right? Like, both the hitters and pitchers, the biggest complaint you hear from them is all about consistency. Like, I can work with any strike zone. I just want it to be the same today as it was yesterday. I want it to be, you know, the same this inning as it was last inning, this batter as it was last batter. That's what I hear. And so, obviously, the robot ump, or the electronic strike zone, if we're being particular, takes care of that. And so you might say, well, umps are going to, they're not going to want it, right? It's going to take their job. But no, you still need a home plate umpire.
Yep.
Balls and strikes is not the only part of the job. In fact, it is the hardest, most annoying part of the job. So you can eliminate that part. They still have to make other plays. They actually still convey the call. They've got the little earpiece, well, and they still go, you know, ball, strike. What it eliminates more than anything are the Angel Hernandezes of the world who want to make themselves the center of attention and seek out conflict with people who are arguing balls and strikes. It should eliminate all of that.
I don't know if it does, because the home plate ump can overrule it.
It can, and that's how Frank Viola became the first person ejected for arguing with the computer. That happened this weekend.
I didn't even see that. Frank Viola got ejected for arguing with the computer.
He is an Atlantic League manager. He went out.
Frank Viola, great mustache back in the day. Yeah. Does he still have the mustache, Frank Viola?
I only saw a very small picture, but he went out and argued with the ump because he wanted the ump to overrule it, and he got ejected. Viola's own wife tweeted...
Wait, he wanted the ump to overrule the computer, or the computer to overrule the ump?
No, he wanted the ump to overrule the computer. Hmm. And so he went out and said, I know you can overrule the computer and you should do that here. And the ump refused to, so he got tossed. His own wife tweeted, I'm not surprised that my own husband was the first one to get ejected for arguing
So that's a great story. I didn't even see that. So, no, I think the ump being able to overrule the computer just undercuts everything. So you're still going to have the Angel Hernandezes of the world who are going to be like, well, I saw this and I'm going to overrule it. You're still going to get that.
I'm not worried about that.
I am. And I'll tell you what else I'm worried about is everybody who says you're going to save a lot of, like, this thing's a time saver.
I did not say that.
Okay. And you didn't just say that now. I don't know if you'd said it previously.
I did not say that now. And in fact, we took calls on Friday and talked about this on Saturday, and all of these people argued with me and saying, I don't know how you say it's not a time. I said, I never say it could be.
It's not going to be. If anything, it can't possibly be faster. It's only going to slow things down.
Because here's what people are conflating. They are seeing, you know, computer strike zone is the same as larger strike zone. And nowhere does it say that. It's just the same strike zone. A larger strike zone could speed up the game, but there's no guarantee that a computer strike zone would be that. A larger one, obviously more strikes, more swinging, more balls into play, or more strikeouts. Regardless, you're going to get through the – you're not going to sit there and get a bunch of 3-2 counts because the zone is going to be bigger. But that's, to me, a secondary, wholly separate issue for the computer strikes.
I think the idea that it's going to speed up the game is nonsense. That's what I think. It's not going to speed the game up. So if that's part of your argument for robot umps –
it isn't mine.
Yeah, no, I know it's not yours, but I know a lot of people feel that way. I think that's nonsense. I don't think that's a factor. I don't think that should be factored in. And I think refs being able to overrule it, umps rather, being able to overrule it at the end of the day, that's silly and undercuts the whole thing. Either the computer calls the balls and strikes or not. If an umpire can overrule them, then he could do it 100 times a game. He could do it 150 times a game. Like, what's the limit? What's the cutoff? So I think that undercuts the whole thing. But here's my real point. Atlantic League, South Atlantic League, what are they? What's this league where they're trying everything?
Just the Atlantic League.
They've added another rule.
Oh, yes.
Which is stealing first base.
This is nice.
This I am on board with. Let's get to this with your phone calls next.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.